I still remember when I was young, the first time I saw an image or a televised broadcast of an American president, what, around 1989, 1990, somewhere right there. And it's what George Bush Sr. declaring war or saying that they're gonna invade Kuwait and begin the Gulf War conflict. And I, at that time, I always heard from the communists how evil America is because, you know, communism liberated us from Western imperialism and capitalism. But then, even though the government said that, people always looked up to America as a world superpower. And to see the president that represent this powerful nation really wowed me as a kid at that time. And I said, wow, this man represent this great nation, and he had the power to begin a war. Imagine that. But you see, even the president of a most powerful country in the world is only a representative of that nation. Right? He is elected into the office. And even the most powerful king or queen in this world, the one most popular right now that we often talked about, is Elizabeth II, right? Everybody kind of seemed to like her. But then, you know, their power isn't really infinite. Huh? And they're also humans, meaning that they make mistakes in how they rule or administer or how to serve and make choices for the greater good of their people or the nation that have been entrusted to them. Yet, it seems like all human beings are finite and we all have our own limitation and our failures and our weaknesses that stop us from truly loving and truly serving with the best intention. But today, we celebrate the King of the universe, Jesus Christ, whose power was not to rule or to oppress, but his power is found in the very paradoxical or worldly contradictory way. His power is found on the cross, by the dying of himself for a greater love. Whose king, whose queen would ever imagine doing that? It seems like all king, all queen, all politician, even the president, even the people that we like, seem to like to hold on to their power. Once they've been elected into the office by the people, they want to keep that office. And they're willing to go to great length and great extent to bash their opponent in order to keep the office they've been elected to. So it always seemed to be power or prestige or wealth or whatever human values that they have put on this office that seem to define them for who they are. But the office of Christ, the office of the kinghood of Christ, it totally different than anything that this world could ever imagine. It is the office of love. On the cross, Jesus Christ did something unimaginable by any human standards. The King, the most powerful, gave up his life for his subject. On the cross, the King gave his life for his subject, us. Jesus Christ on the cross chose to die for us. How many of us, if we are the most powerful being in this universe, would choose to die for his or her subject? And much more than that, much more than the president or the king of this world, huh? If you and I study anything regarding the universe now, we know that the Hubble telescope has found, with its limited capacity right now, They're just guessing right now. It could be much more because the universe is still expanding. And as of today, the Hubble telescope and many astrologers and many physicists are just guesstimating there are about 30 billion galaxies in the universe. 30 billion, not million, billion galaxies in the universe. And we're one of them. And heck, even we're one of them, and people are having a hard time trying to map the whole Milky Way galaxy, and we're just one tiny speck of that Milky Way galaxy. And out of 30 billion galaxies, the creator of the universe chose to die for us. If that doesn't boggle your mind and my mind, I don't know what else. It's like asking for the most powerful human person to die for a bacteria that is named A1B12 something. Heck, I would not die for a bacteria. I would pour some bleach on it and kill it. You know? But the king of the universe chose to die for us. And in dying for us, he has shown us the way of what it means to have power. The power is found in giving of ourselves. The power is found in the gifts of ourselves to one another. If the king of the universe and the one who loved us have died for us, so St. John in his epistle said, we're called and are commanded to also give ourselves in service and in love of one another. But the reason that we all failed is because we all want people to love according to our conditions, to our standards. When was the last time that you and I are willing to love the other person according to God's standards, according to Christ's standards? I'm telling you right now, in recent days, I can tell you those standards are really hard. There are people right now that are really hard for me to love. I'm not going to sugarcoat or sweeten it. But right now, much more than ever, Christ is calling for you and I to truly love. Even if we cannot be lovey-dovey with that person or have a good relationship with that person, are we condemning that person to hell in our prayer? Or are we lifting up that person and praying for that person and that person's conversion and his or her goodness in according to God's will? Oftentimes we condemn the person or the people that we don't like in our prayer, in our words, in our actions. But when was the last time we lift up a person by asking God, Lord, just as you are working in my life, also work in his or her own life so that he or she, all of us, could come to know you as you are and to truly love one another. My spiritual director once said, Christianity isn't for sissies. Think about it. It's hard. We talk much about love, but we always walk when it gets hard. We're spiritual sissies. Why can we strengthen our love for one another? That's hard because we expect love to be according to our conditions instead of God's conditions. And today, my brothers and sisters, November 23rd, the Universal Church also celebrate the Vietnamese martyrs, martyrs from my own country, my own motherland. They're estimated during the time of persecution when Christianity was first introduced to Vietnam. Within a short time, they're estimated to be about 30,000 Christians who were killed or harshly persecuted for their faith. 30,000 of them. And from that 30,000, only 118 are canonized today. And the early Christians in Vietnam were so loving of each other that even though the ordinary people didn't know what they believed, they called them the people of the religion of love because of how they love and care for one another. And when it came time to die and to be martyred for their faiths, it's some of the cruelest death that no one could ever imagine. When I read through the history of the Vietnamese martyrs, there, of course, the most obvious and the most luxurious way to die was to get executed by chopping off your head. But there are other ways where they pin you down to the ground and you get stomped by elephants until you die. Or they could also said that another way is that they tie four of your limbs, two arms and two feet, with four horses, and they beat the horse until the horse ripped your body apart. Or the most obvious one, when they really hate you because they don't want you to preach the faith, but that they tie you down, and then it's called that to be sliced to death with 1,000 slice. So they take a small knife and they slice your meat to 1,000 pieces until you bled to death. Or they pour hot oil over you. All these people, 30,000 of them, chose to die. Why did they choose to die? Tertullian, one of the early Christian writers and theologians in the church, have said, the blood of the martyrs is the seed of faith. When we choose to die for Christ, that's when our faith is going to grow, personally and communally speaking. It's so easy nowadays that when it gets hard, especially in America, when it gets hard, we choose to walk away. And if that is the attitude, if that the choice, then of course, faith is just a profession that is only good when it's convenient, but something to be abandoned when it's hard. Faith begins with us now of how we choose to die to ourselves in daily lives, in daily interaction, in daily choices that we choose to love one another. I can tell you, like this morning, I woke up and I was half awake and I wanted to have some coffee right away. And I was kind of pushing off my prayer time, I said, I'll pray after I do my laundry. I'll pray after I'm done having my coffee. Oh, Lord, I love you. I promise you, I'll pray when I have more time. I'm just busy this morning, trying to catch up with everything. But then, my conscience said, Koi, stop making excuse. And then I had to sit down and said, laundry come afterward. Cooking come afterward. All these chores come afterward. It's the daily choices that we have to make in order to love God. And that is hard. So on this solemnity of Christ, the King of the universe, I challenge you, as we close off this liturgical year and begin a new one, I'm not asking you to be like a big saint that's going to perform a whole bunch of miracles or preach well or bring a lot of people back to the church. I'm asking you to begin a life of holiness with just one action, What can I do for this new liturgical year, this upcoming liturgical year? Huh? Just one thing, one good spiritual habit that I can take on for this new liturgical year, that I can persevere and keep doing day in and day out. My spiritual director told me, a grain of rice put into a bowl is insignificant. But if you put one grain of rice each day into the bowl, you have a bowl full of 365 grains of rice at the end of the year. Good habit begins small. Good changes in our faith begin small, but we have to begin it. So I challenge you, as we begin this new liturgical year, may we begin something with commitment, with love, but with perseverance, that we can grow in the love that Christ has for us, so that He can always be the King of our heart.